11. Glenn Belsner, searching futilely for Roberta Rockingham, saw a small number of people trudging toward the settlement. Those who had gone off. Fraser and Thug, Maggie Walsh, the new man Russell, Mary and Seth Morley, they were all there. Or were they? His heart laboring, Belsner said,
I don't see Betty Jo Berm. Is she injured? You left her, you bastards!
He stared at them, feeling his jaw tremble with impotent anger.
Is that correct?
She's dead, Seth Morley said.
How?
He said. Dr. Babel came up beside him. The two of them waited together as the four men and two women approached. Seth Morley said,
She drowned herself.
He looked around. Where's that kid, that Dunkelwald?
Dead, Dr. Babel said.
Maggie Walsh said,
And Bert Kossler?
Neither Babel nor Belsner answered.
Then he's dead too, Russell said.
That's right,
Belsner nodded.
There are eight of us left. Roberta Rockingham, she's gone. So possibly she's dead too. I think we'll have to assume she is.
Didn't you stay together? Russell said.
Did you?
Glenn Belsner answered. Again there was silence. Somewhere, far off, a warm wind blew dust and infirm lichens about. A swirl lifted above the main buildings of the settlement and then writhed off and gone. The air, as Glenn Belsner sucked it in noisily, smelled bad. As if, he thought, the skins of dead dogs are drying somewhere on a line. Death, he thought. That's all I can think of now. And it's easy to see why. Death for us has blotted everything else out. It has become, in less than 24 hours, the mainstay of our life.
You couldn't bring her body back? He said to them.
It drifted downstream, Seth Morley said.
And it was on fire.
He came up beside Belsner and said,
How did Bert Kossler die?
Tony stabbed him.
What about Tony?
Glenn Belsner said,
I shot him before he could kill me.
What about Roberta Rockingham? Did you shoot her too?
No,
Belsner said shortly.
I think, Fraser said, we're going to have to pick a new leader.
Belsner said woodenly,
I had to shoot him. He would have killed all the rest of us. Ask Babel. He'll back me up.
I can't back you up, Babel said.
I have nothing more to go on than they do. I have only your oral statement.
Seth Morley said, What was Tony using as a weapon?
A sword, Belsner said. You can see that. It's still there with him in his room.
Where did you get the gun you shot him with?
Russell said.
I had it, Belsner said. He felt sick and weak. I did what I could, he said. I did what I had to.
So they aren't responsible for all the deaths, Seth Morley said. You are responsible for Tony Dunkelwald's death, and he's responsible for Bert's.
Dunkelwelt,
Belsner corrected aimlessly.
And we don't know if Mrs. Rockingham is dead. She may just have roamed off, possibly out of fear.
She couldn't, Belsner said. She was too ill.
I think, Seth Morley said, that Fraser is right. We need a different leader. To Babel, he said, Where's his gun?
He left it in Tony's room, Babel said.
Belsner slid away from them, in the direction of Tony Dunkelwelt's living quarters.
Stop him! Babel said.
Ignatz Thug, Wade Fraser, Seth Morley, and Babel hurried past Belsner. In a group, they trotted up the steps and onto the porch, and then into Tony's quarters. Russell stood aloof. He remained with Belsner and Maggie Walsh. Coming out of Tony's doorway, Seth Morley held the gun in his hand and said,
Russell, don't you think we're doing the right thing?
Give him back his gun, Russell said.
Surprised, Seth Morley halted. But he did not bring the gun over to Belsner.
Thanks,
Belsner said to Russell. I can use the support. To Morley and the others, he said,
Give me the gun, as Russell says. It isn't loaded anyhow. I took the shells out.
He held out his hand and waited. Coming back down the steps from the porch and still carrying the gun, Seth Morley said with grave reservations,
You killed someone.
He had to,
Russell said.
I'm keeping the gun, Seth Morley said.
My husband is going to be your leader, Mary Morley said. I think it's a very good idea. I think you'll find him excellent. At Tekel Yufarsin, he held a position of large authority.
Why don't you join them? Belsner said to Russell.
Because I know what happened. I know what you had to do. If I can manage to talk to them, maybe I can.
He broke off.
Belsner turned toward the group of men to see what was happening. Ignatz Thug held the gun. He had grabbed it away from Morley. Now he held it pointed at Belsner, a seedy, twisted grin on his face.
Give it back, Seth Morley said to him. All of them were shouting at Thug, but he stood unmoved, still pointing the gun at Belsner.
I'm your leader now, Thug said, with or without a vote. You can vote me in if you want, but it doesn't matter.
To the three men around him, he said,
You go over there where they are. Don't get too close to me, you understand?
It's not loaded, Belsner repeated.
Seth Morley looked crushed. His face had a pale, dry cast to it, as if he knew, obviously he knew, that he had been responsible for Thug getting possession of the gun.
Maggie Walsh said, I know what to do.
She reached into her pocket and brought out a copy of Spektowski's book. In her mind, she knew that she had found the way to get the gun away from Ignatz Thug. Opening the book at random, she walked toward him, and as she walked, she read aloud from the book.
Hence it can be said, she intoned, that God in history shows several phases. One, the period of purity before the Form Destroyer was awakened into activity. Two, the period of the curse, when the power of the deity was weakest, the power of the Form Destroyer the greatest. This because God had not perceived the Form Destroyer and so was taken by surprise. Three, the birth of God on earth, sign that the period of absolute curse and estrangement from God had ended. Four, the period now.
She had come almost up to him. He stood unmoving, still holding the gun. She continued to read the sacred text aloud.
The period now in which God walks the world, redeeming the suffering now, redeeming all life later through the figure of himself as the intercessor who...
Go back with them, Thug told her, or I'll kill you.
Who, it is sure, is still alive, but not in this circle. Five, the next and last period. A terrific bang boomed at her eardrums. Deafened, she moved a step back, and then she felt great pain in her chest. She felt her lungs die from the great painful shock of it. The scene around her became dull. The light faded and she saw only darkness. Seth Morley, she tried to say, but no sound came out. And yet she heard noise. She heard something huge and far off, chugging violently into the darkness.
She was alone. Thud, thud, came the noise. Now she saw iridescent color, mixed into a light which traveled like a liquid. It formed buzzsaws and pinwheels and crept upward on each side of her. Directly before her, the huge thing throbbed menacingly. She heard its imperative, angry voice summoning her upward. The urgency of its activity frightened her. It demanded rather than asked. It was telling her something. She knew what it meant by its enormous pounding. Wham, 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 it went, and, terrified, filled with physical pain, she called to it.
Libera me, Domine, she said. De morte eterna, indie illa tremenda.
It throbbed on and on, and she glided helplessly toward it. Now, on the periphery of her vision, she saw a fantastic spectacle. She saw a great crossbow, and on it, the intercessor. The string was pulled back. The intercessor was placed on it like an arrow, and then, soundlessly, the intercessor was shot upward into the smallest of the concentric rings.
Agnus Dei, she said. Qui tollis peccata mundi.
She had to look away from the throbbing vortex. She looked down and back and saw far below her a vast frozen landscape of snow and boulders. A furious wind blew across it. As she watched, more snow piled up around the rocks. A new period of glaciation, she thought, and found that she had trouble thinking, let alone talking, in English.
Lacrimosa dies illa,
she said, gasping with pain.
Her entire chest seemed to have become a block of suffering.
Qua researcher ex favilla, judicandus homo reus.
It seemed to make the pain less, this need to express herself in Latin, a language which she had never studied and knew nothing about.
Huic ergo parse Deus,
she said.
Pie Jesu Domine, dona eis requiem.
The throbbing continued on. A chasm opened before her feet. She began to fall. Below her, the frozen landscape of the hell world grew closer. Again she cried out,
Libra me, Domine, de morte eterna.
But still she fell. She had almost reached the hell world, and nothing meant to lift her up. Something with immense wings soared up, like a great metallic dragonfly with spines jutting from its head. It passed her, and a warm wind billowed after it.
Salve me, fons pietatis!
She called to it. She recognized it and felt no surprise at seeing it. The intercessor fluttering up from the hell world back to the fire of the smaller inner rings. Lights in various colors bloomed on all sides of her. She saw a red smoky light burning close and, confused, turned toward it. But something made her pause. The wrong color, she thought to herself. I should be looking for a clear white light, the proper womb in which to be reborn. She drifted upward, carried by the warm wind of the intercessor. The smoky red light fell behind, and in its place, to her right, she saw a powerful, unflickering yellow light. As best she could, she propelled herself toward that. The pain in her chest seemed to have lessened. In fact, her entire body felt vague.
Thank you, she thought, for easing the discomfort. I appreciate that.
I have seen it, she said to herself.
I have seen the intercessor, and through it I have a chance of surviving. Lead me, she thought. Take me to the proper color of light, to the right new birth.
The clear white light appeared. She yearned toward it, and something helped propel her.
Are you angry at me?
She thought, meaning the enormous presence that throbbed. She could still hear the throbbing, but it no longer meant for her. It would throb on throughout eternity because it was beyond time, outside of time, never having been in time. And there was no space present either. Everything appeared two-dimensional and squeezed together, like robust but crude figures drawn by a child or by some primitive man. Bright, colorful figures, but absolutely flat and touching.
Mors stupebit et natura, she said aloud. Cum resurget creatura, judicandi responsura.
Again the throbbing lessened. It has forgiven me, she said to herself. It is letting the intercessor carry me to the right light. Toward the clear white light she floated, still uttering from time to time pious Latin phrases. The pain in her chest had gone now entirely, and she felt no weight. Her body had ceased to consume both time and space.
Whee, she thought. This is marvelous.
Throb, throb went the central presence, but no longer for her. It throbbed for others now. The day of the final audit had come for her, had come and now had passed. She had been judged, and the judgment was favorable. She experienced utter, absolute joy. And continued, like a moth among novas, to flutter upward toward the proper light.
I didn't mean to kill her,
Ignatz Thug said huskily. He stood gazing down at the body of Maggie Walsh.
I didn't know what she was going to do. I mean, she kept walking and walking. I thought she was after the gun.
He jerked an accusing shoulder toward Glenn Belsner.
And he said it was empty.
Russell said,
She was going for the gun. You're right.
Then I didn't do wrong, Thug said.
No one spoke for a time.
I'm not giving up the gun,
Thug said presently.
That's right, Thug, Babel said. You keep hold of it, so we can see how many other innocent people you want to kill.
I didn't want to kill her,
Thug pointed the gun at Dr. Babel.
I've never killed nobody before. Who wants the gun?
He looked around wildly at all of them.
I did exactly what Belsner did, no more and no less. We're the same, him and me, so I'm sure as hell not going to give him the gun.
Panting, his breath rasping in his windpipe, Thug gripped the gun and stared huge-eyed around at all of them. Belsner walked over to Seth Morley.
We've got to get it away from him.
I know,
Seth Morley said, but he could think of no way to get it. If Thug had killed simply because someone, and a woman at that, had approached him reading from the book, then he would shoot any and all of them at the slightest pretext. Thug was now blatantly and floridly psychotic. It was obvious. He had wanted to kill Maggie Walsh, and Seth Morley realized something now that he hadn't understood before. Belsner had killed, but he had not wanted to. Thug had killed for the pleasure of it. It made a difference. They were safe from Belsner, unless they became homicidal themselves. In that case, Belsner would, of course, shoot. But if they did nothing provocative.
Don't,
his wife Mary said in his ear.
We have to get the gun back,
Seth Morley said.
And it's my fault he has it. I let him get it away from me.
He held out his hand, held it in Ignatz Thug's direction.
Give it to me, he said,
and felt his body squinch up in fear. His body prepared itself for death.